children's story, The Man in the Moon, Santa Claus.
We need a list of stupid questions.
Yeah, you really want to make me angry.
It works.
We don't believe in the man in the moon anymore, do we? Or Santa Claus bringing us all this Christmas present. Or that the earth is flat. We used to believe it. We call that children's stories. And one of the children's stories also how? In heaven. Do we believe still in hell and hell? Do we think they exist? I mean, when it comes from the West, you know, the church is really pounding on that, isn't it? Especially when he comes from Rome, where the Pope says. So we washed that away together with the Santa Claus and the Man in the Moon. We washed away hell and heaven. Because we don't see it. That's why it doesn't exist. I mean, we just don't believe that, you know, that there's a life after death. Eh? I mean, it's incomprehensible. I mean, we all have the notion, you know, we die, you know, and everything is just vanishes. What is vanishing? I mean, there's nothing in this universe that vanishes. Nothing. I mean, even if you cut down a tree and fire it up, it doesn't vanish. It just changes into something else. So how can we assume that we are vanishing? That we are just completely annihilated? If nothing in this whole universe is annihilated, everything changes into something else. I mean, we don't believe in God anymore, but we believe in other gods. Now we have other gods. Instead of the one God who ruled the universe or who created this universe, we have the God of money. Or the God of science. I mean, physical science is one God, medical science is another God, and we believe them 100%. Whenever they say something, yes, yes, yes. I mean, I should look after my body, you know. Because if I don't do this, or if I don't follow this medical advice, or that kind of advice, then I get sick. So we believe it. I mean, there was in the 70s or in the 80s? Men at Work, an Australian band, you know, had a nice song. It was called Blinded with Science. We're completely blinded through our science. Because science explains us everything. But if you would look at science, you know how it explains things? It explains things only what it understands at that moment. And that's all what it can. It can extremely change from one opposite to the next opposite within 20 years. And we forget about it, what they told us 20 years ago. Yes, that is safe, that is safe. And then now we know it's not safe. But we still blindly believe in it. We still think they are right. The doctors that told us, you know, 50 years ago or 30 years ago that this was good or this was good, and now we find out, you know, it's actually, you know, quite the contrary. Oh. But today they say it and today we believe it. And tomorrow they just say the opposite because they just found out, you know, it wasn't what they thought. So we're swinging around from one branch of the tree to the next. I mean, believing in the man of the moon is much more stable. I mean, how long did they believe that the earth was flat? I mean, only Europeans can be so stupid. I mean, the Asians never believed that the earth was flat. I mean, only Europeans can be so stupid, huh? We believe whatever they tell us. And probably it is our education from these 2,000 years of Christianity. Whatever the Pope said, we believe. And now whatever science says, we believe. No doubt about it, isn't it? I mean, and if we go down now within ourselves, whatever we think, we believe it's true. I mean, and when we just recognize our thoughts, or when we just remember some of the thoughts we had about 20 years ago, they're just quite the contrary of what they are now. Just the same thing. Everything is changing. Everything is constantly changing. All around. Sometimes within days, sometimes within weeks, sometimes within years. Our thoughts are changing, our memory is changing, our feelings are changing, our body is changing, everything is changing. There's nothing constant. There's only one transition into the next state, and then in the next state, and then the next state. And death is just one transition from one state to the next state. I mean, we have to wake up, huh? We read the newspaper and we believe. I mean, not every newspaper. We select the newspaper that we believe. And this one we believe. So we are unstable. We have to follow the thinking or the thoughts or the ideas of our leaders. Not necessarily a government leader. Scientific leaders, medical leaders, or maybe, you know, in the 70s it was the Green Party, until 20 years later it showed up, you know, that the Greens are just as corruptible as everybody else. That nothing, you know, wherever there are human beings, you know, there is error. Like in Latin you say, error in human beings, huh? So what can we trust? At the moment, hardly anything. I mean, we can listen. We can listen to the teachings of the Lord Buddha. And if it sounds logical to us, then we can believe it and we can try it out. I mean, what is the first noble truth? The first noble truth that there is dukkha. I mean, what is dukkha? Dukkha is restlessness, discomfort, dis-ease. Yes, thank you. Uneasy feelings, painful feelings, suffering. That's all dukkha. And each one of us experiences daily. Unpleasant feelings. Unpleasant bodily feelings, unpleasant mental feelings, dis-ease, discomfort, restlessness, pain. So that is the first noble truth, that there is dukkha. In every one of the existence. And the Lord Buddha points out there are 36 realms of existence. One of the realms is the human realm. Another realm that we see is the animal realm. We are on the sixth level. Or on the fifth level. I forgot. and 30 levels above us are the heavenly realms, the angels. What we call them, you know, what we know from Krishna is the angels. We think it's a fairy tale. Angels, we paint them with wings. Because we think we can fly, and whatever we know, we see that can fly has wings. But they don't need wings to fly. I mean, they need only what they need is their consciousness, and they go from one place to the next, even if it's 10,000 miles away. In 1 second, they are there. Because they are conscious beings, or fine material beings. They don't have to carry around a heavy body from 50 to 100 kilos. You know, wherever they go. I mean, when you want to go here, from here to there, you know, you have to carry your own weight around. I mean, you think that is fun? I mean, it would be much nicer, you know, just to think about the location where we want to go and then we are there. Whoops. But now we are here stuck in this body. Really stuck. I mean, so stuck in this body that we believe we are this body. And that's why we are afraid when this body is going to die. We're not afraid when the body is going to be born. We're only afraid when the body is going to die. Because we don't know what is happening then. But we are not afraid when we go to sleep. Huh? I mean, we don't know what is happening through our sleep. I mean, you can call it a little death. Then we wake up again. Ah, wow. A little bit different from the day, you know, when we went to sleep. Huh? Probably more energetic and not in that bad mood that we were in the last night. If you can really sleep. Huh? If you can't sleep, then it's of course, you know, it gets worse and worse and worse. So these are the human realm is one of these 36 levels of existence. And in each level of existence there is dukkha. There is no level of existence where there is not dukkha. The Lord Buddha teaches that in the human level the most we can have, I mean, if we are a perfect human being, the most we can have is 50% of dukkha and 50% of sukha, just the opposite of dukkha, pleasantly. I mean, the higher we go in the realms, the more sukha they have and the less dukkha they have, but they still have dukkha. The lower we go, the more dukkha they have and the less sukha they have. Until we go to the hell realms where they have hardly any sukha. And the hell realms do exist. I mean, just don't even think that they don't exist. And we are so scared of it. Because we have been all there. I mean, I don't know how many times we have been there, but we have been quite there for quite a few times. And we have been in heaven. We have been in any kind of realm. Through our journey through this universe. I mean, we have been in every kind of existence. We have been animals, we have been human beings, we have been hell beings, we have been demons, we have been ghosts, and we have been everything. Some people see ghosts, some people see heavenly beings. But of course we don't believe it. Because for our eyes they don't exist. But there are people who can actually see them with their eyes open. And in meditation you can see them with your eyes closed. There's no problem. So you can see that they exist. I mean, if you want, if you don't believe in hell, and if you want, you can go there and visit them and see how they suffer. I mean, you don't want to go there. So that's why the Lord Buddha gave us the 5 precepts. To protect us from falling down into hell. What are the 5 precepts? Not to harm any living being is the first precept. The second precept is not to take what is not given. Not only stealing, just not to take what is not given. Not acquiring it in a wrong sense. Not cheating out somebody out of his property. That's all against the second precept. The third precept is no harmful speech, no lies, no abusive speech. The fourth precept, no sexual misconduct. That means one man, one woman. That's it. Not one woman, three men, or three, one man, three women. No, one man, one woman. Using anybody for one's own sexual pleasure. That's abuse of them. Or it's against the precepts. Using one's power, one's position, one's money, you know, to indulge in sexual pleasures with the other sex. That's against the precepts. Using somebody, abusing somebody, misuse. And we have that a lot. Not only in Thailand. Also in the West. Sexual abuse. Teachers using the students. Sexual abuse. A minister using his secretary. Or a CEO using his secretary. Or, you know, whatever. Whatever there is in the company. Just because that. Or Hollywood. You know, wherever it is. Priest using the little minister. The minister boys, or whatever. All sexual abuse. And that is going really down to hell. To a very, very unpleasant hell. Sexual abuse is really one of the bigger ones. And the last precept is no alcohol, no drugs. Everything that makes us not mindful. Or everything that takes our mindfulness away. Or better, everything that takes our awareness away. So, alcohol, certainly drugs, ecstasy and things like that. Reduce mindfulness. So these are the five precepts. And the Lord Buddha teaches us, as long as we keep the five precepts, we are kept from falling down. The moment we break them, I mean, we have to go down. No way. There's no other way. I mean, it's just like here, like in every country there exists law. If you do this, you know, you're caught, you're going to prison. I mean, you know, it depends on the crime that you do. Sometimes you go only for 3 weeks, and sometimes you go for 30 years. I mean, we believe in this law, don't we? So, why can't we believe in the laws that are working, you know, not only through the governments of this world, but through the whole universe. Because it holds for every kind of being in any kind of realm of existence. Don't think, you know, that the beings in the other realms cannot do, you know, go against the precepts. I mean, of course they can. Even heavenly beings, you know, doing bad things. It's not uncommon. So they will, you know, once their heavenly existence is finished, they will go to hell. Oh. Of course we don't like to hear it. I mean, I understand that. I mean, it's something, you know, it's really unpleasant. And something is triggered in our memory about these unpleasant states that we remember from previous lives, where we have been there, and we know how unpleasant it is. That's why we are so frightened of it. And we know how pleasant the heavenly realms are, because that's why we want to go there. That's why we are so seduced by it. We know it from our own experience. Don't even think, you know, that somebody, you know, somebody can make you afraid of something that you don't know. If somebody says, you know, in Sumatra there's a dark being, you know, they exist, you know, you're not afraid of that. I mean, they can say the most terrible things about this being, you know. The moment it catches, you know, you burn like fire, you know, put like acid, you know, over you. You're not afraid of it. Oh, that's it. That's over there. I don't know it. But if you have been caught by this being, you know, and you escape this being, I mean, you, wherever you go, you're afraid of that. Just like you escaped a bear. You're afraid of that bear whenever you see a bear coming up, no? Or whenever somebody talks about a bear or a lion or a tiger, huh? That's why we're afraid. We remember. Very deep down in our soul, we remember. Very deep down in our chitta, we remember. And that's why we also remember the happiness states of being utterly pleasant. Amen. So, actually, the Lord Buddha gave us these five precepts as a protection. I mean, it's up to you. People, you know, say because they can't keep the precepts, okay, hell is, you know, in the hell there are a lot of bees, yeah? It's warm all the time, it's very... It's never cold, never snow, there's no ice. And there's a lot of people, you know, there, all my friends are there. I mean, they're just joking around, but you know, of course, you know, it's so dense, you know, and there's no limit how many beings can there be. I mean, each being, you know, goes, you know, just like in a prison, you know, they just pack the people into the prison. I mean, we all know it, huh? But we don't believe it, or we don't want to believe it. Because then, if we believe it, we have to be responsible for our own actions, for our words, for our speech, for our thoughts. Because they are the ones who produce this karma. They are the ones who go against the precepts. So, just as a little reminder, don't be scared. I mean, whatever we have done wrong, you know, we have to pay for it. We cannot undo that. We cannot undo bad deeds. There's no way. So forget it. But don't forget that you don't want to do it again. You just don't want to do any bad deeds from now on. You just want to keep it in the five precepts. I mean, there are so many people, just on this planet Earth, just from the human being, there are so many people, the moment they die, they go to hell. I mean, it's not only the Lord Buddha that pointed it out, it was also Jesus that pointed it out. The masses are going through the broad door that leads to destruction. Only few go in the stony path that leads to the heavenly rise. That's what he taught. The Lord Buddha was much more clear when he was asked how many people go to hell and how many people go to heaven. He said, you see the bull over there? How many hairs does he have on his fur? That are the people who go to hell. How many horns does he have? These are the people who go to heaven on his arm. I mean, just think about how many million hairs are on the fur of a bull. But we have the choice. Now, from this very moment that we are mindful, that we wake up, that we want to be responsible for our life, we have the choice. Not to go against the five precepts, keeping within the limit of the five precepts, and we can have a lot of joy with it. I mean, there's hardly anything forbidden. I mean, we don't want to kill anybody, or we don't want to harm beings, you know, we don't want to kill animals. That's also beings. I mean, we still can have a lot of joy. I mean, we have a partner, you know, we can still have all the joy. We don't cheat anybody out of his money. We don't take things, you know, that are not given to us. We don't say lies, you know, but we still, you know, we still can watch movies, we still can go in theaters and shows, we can travel around the world. I mean, that is not taken away from us. Only the harmful things the Lord Buddha said, you know, we should not do. Because he knows it from his own experience. That goes down to us. And then you look at the life that Tenacha Mahabodha, my venerable teacher, you know, said. He was constantly jumping from hell to heaven and from heaven to hell. Back, you know, and then coming back, you know, in the human form, you know, just to make enough karma to be for the next 200,000 years in heaven and 300,000 years in hell. Because in the human life we can do it within an hour. We can do karma that leads us to hell for 150,000 years. Just within a moment. I mean, we never think about it because we don't care. And we have, and a lot, and then quite some stories, you know, especially in Europe. I mean, people who kill their parents. I mean, are the ones who go down to hell for 150,000 years. Not 150,000 years. Just because of greed they kill their parents. Just because of power they kill their parents. I mean, just think of it. Well, we just want something, you know, we kill somebody off and then we have to, you know, pay for it. Parents, father and mother, killing an arahant, a person who is completely liberated. Drawing blood from the Lord Buddha, just like his cousin. The cousin, you cannot kill a Buddha. But his cousin tried to kill him 3 times. And the last time he drew blood from it, hitting him with a stone. So he's down in hell for 450,000 years. Or splitting the Sangha. Creating a schism in the religion. And we are very easily. We can easily do that. Just we believe something and we go against the others, we can create. Martin Luther. He created a schism that caused a war for 30 years, and it was the most brutal war in Europe. For 30 years. I mean, there was hardly anybody left after that. Of course, the pest, you know, did the Black Death, or of course, did put also his toll on it. I don't know. It happened. So it's very easily done. So we should be very mindful of what we do. I mean, as long as we keep within the five precepts, nothing, you know, nothing really bad can happen to us in the future. I mean, we still have to pay off our old debts, but... But from now on, we are going the path on the top of the mountain. But we have to remind ourselves all the time. Whenever we want something, whenever we do something, is it within the limits of the five precepts? Or is it within the five precepts? Yes. Okay, then go ahead and do it. I mean, there's nothing wrong going to town and having a drink. But not alcohol. I mean, why can it not be grape juice? I mean, why does it have to be wine? Because it induces a nice feeling, you know, we forget our pain, we forget our dukkha. That's why alcohol is so famous. It helps us forget our dukkha. Uh-huh. That's why we drink it. It induces a nice feeling, you know, forgetting our dukkha. The same thing for ecstasy and things like that, you know, just to make things like a little bit more interesting. So, now coming back to the second noble truth. I just want to remind you from time to time. I mean, I was brought up as a Christian. Huh? I mean, I heard about hell and I never liked it. I mean, I personally, you know, I know, I understand. But when you get into touch with, when you get into touch with Buddhism, you know, there are certain things that you just have to, trust in the beginning until you see it for yourself. And that is one thing. There is heaven and there is hell. There is karma and there are results of karma. There are good deeds that have good results and there are bad deeds that have bad results. So whatever we do with our action, with our mouth or with our thought will create karma. I mean, from physics we know whatever is put into motion, it will have an effect. If we know the effect, I mean, that's good. Most of the time it's so complicated that we don't know where it's going. If we are at the top of the mountain, you know, we are a little bit careless here, an avalanche is created. That kills a whole village. Isn't it? We just put a little stone into motion, you know, and create an avalanche. So be careful. That's all what I wanted to say. Be careful. If you want to go the Buddhist path, this is certainly one thing we have to trust in the beginning. There's heaven, there's hell, there's karma. What is karma? It's the result of our actions. In other words, what you sow, that you will reap. I mean, we all know that. I mean, we are coming from a Christian background, we know that. I mean, every farmer knows that if he sows potatoes, he will reap potatoes and nothing else. Don't we? So if we sow love, we will reap love. If we sow hate, we will reap hate. When we are hateful against other persons will be hateful towards us. That's the law of karma. If we kill other persons will kill us. If we torture other people will torture us. That's the law of karma. Don't do unto others what you don't want others to do unto you. We know that, huh? We heard it, you know, from our parents, maybe. But we don't follow it. Because we think we are stronger. So we can hit him. Until a person who is stronger than us comes and hits us. I mean, that's how it works. It will come back. Everything will come back to us. Because we are the owner of this karma. And when you look, and just another diversion, and when you look what actually goes from one life to the next, that is karma. So whatever we reap in this life goes to the next life. Also, our body is result of our karma. Our state of mind is result of our karma. I mean, some people are stupid, some people are clever, some people are skillful, some people are unskillful. It's all karma. It's all the results of our action from the previous lives. Mostly, you know, in the body and in the thing. Our life length is also a result of karma. Everything. I mean, everything, when you look at it, when you look at Buddhism, it is very logical. It's just like physics law. I mean, you understand the laws of physics and you understand how this universe works. You understand the law of karma and then you know how it works. But to understand the law of karma, of course, it's not easy because it's quite complicated with all the things that are the factors that are coming in. But it's not beyond our capabilities to understand it, to see it for ourselves happening. I mean, once you stop something, you know, you will see it coming back. I realized that. I had always a very sharp tongue, you know, and then whoever was a little bit weaker than me, you know, he got my tongue, you know. I just put some very cooling words, you know, where he was just crushed out. Until I saw that this is something very, very unhealthy. And then I stopped it. And then suddenly, you know, it didn't take very long. I mean, all my colleagues coming back to me, I said, ah, see, there it comes. You just did that, you know, just 2 or 3 years ago. How come? The moment you stop doing, you know, something bad, you know, it comes back to you. The results of your bad actions. You're lucky, you know, if you're in a state of mind where you can accept it. But if you don't want to accept it and say, no, I have to be the winner. I mean, then you just go on forever and ever and ever. Until you're in a position, and that is what karma brings you. It brings you in a situation where you can't avoid it anymore. Where you're not strong. Where you can't avoid, you know, the physical interactions of other people because you're built that you have a very weak body. I mean, karma creates that. Karma is very logical. It is just a law. It's just a law of physics. Just think about it, just like the law of physics. It's very logical. It's very rational. There's nothing hidden behind it. And there's no God, you know, who observes this law. Because the law itself works just like the physics laws, you know. If you throw something in the air, it will come down. Boop, out. That's a law. If you put a seed of potato in the earth, there will be a potato and not salad. And not corn. I mean, that's just simple, isn't it? Very simple, very logical. So, coming back to the second noble truth. What is the second noble truth? It explains the origin for our dukkha. And the origin for our dukkha is the desire. The desire to be, the desire not to be, the desire to become or not to become. Becoming a teacher, becoming a scientist, becoming rich or becoming, you know, staying in this country, staying in that country, you know, whatever. That will create dukkha. Every kind of desire will create dukkha. I want to have my ice cream, but there's no ice cream stand around. That creates dukkha. I want to go now to Paris, but there's no train leaving to Paris. That creates dukkha. That's a desire that creates dukkha. And all the whole day, you know, you're just mindfully observing one day and you will see all the desires. Now I want to eat something. Now I want to wash myself. Now I need to wash the clothes. Everything, every moment, you know, desire comes into it. If you can fulfill it, you know, then it's fine. If you cannot fulfill it, then very often you can't fulfill the desire that we have. And that creates extreme dukkha. We meet people that we don't want to meet, and we don't meet people that we want to meet. We get a position that we don't want to have, and we don't get the position that we do want to have. I mean, that is how our dukkha is created. Not being satisfied with what is there. Not being satisfied with how the world runs. And constantly criticize it. I mean, who is responsible? I mean, if it's not our father or mother that is responsible for our deformation of our mind, then at least it's the school, isn't it? Or if it's not the school, then it's the government. I mean, the government is responsible, but who is the government? The government are people, just like you and me. The government is nothing. I mean, and if we even can't blame the government, you know, we blame the weather. I mean, this typhoon, or this heavy weather, or this snow, or this ice, you know. I mean, we always look for scapegoats. We never think, you know, we were in charge of it. And that what it means, you know, to take up responsibility. We are in charge of our life. So we have to be responsible for whatever happens to us. Because there's nobody else that created that what happens to us. Except ourselves. But that, of course, is a very hard nut to crack. And it's very, very difficult to accept. I mean, we like to blame everybody else, you know, for our misfortune. That's why we run, you know, when we were Christians, we run to the church and prayed, you know, take this misfortune away, please, please Jesus, oh, please Lord, take this misfortune away from me. And then we run in the lottery, and but we don't, you know, we don't run into the church, please take this money away from me. Because we only pray for the bad things to take away from us. We don't take, pray to the Lord to take the good things away from us. Does it give us something to think? Good things are happening to us, bad things are happening to us. We don't want to experience bad things. We are always, all our life, we are running away from bad experiences. From bad feelings, from bad states of memories, from bad situations, from bad people. Always running away. Always trying, always hankering after, just like a dog, you know, that has a stick with a sausage hanging in front of his nose. Always running after this sausage. He never can reach it. That's our life. Always running away from the bad things and always running after the good things. And this we have to stop, because that's where our dukkha comes from. The desire not to meet with the things that we don't want to meet, the desire to meet with the things that we like to meet. That's where dukkha creates. So, if you accept that there is dukkha in your life, okay, that's fine. But if you don't like the dukkha, and you want to do something against it, I mean, then you have to work. I mean, it's your decision, it's your life, it's your responsibility. So, if you accept whatever happens to you, that's just one part of your life, that's fine. Then you don't have to do anything. Just don't get angry about it. If you like to be in a misery state of mind, if you like to be in a bad mood, if you like, you know, that neighbors throw up on you and so whatever, okay, that's fine. But if you want to change something, then you have to understand. Then you have to go the path of wisdom. So, now we're coming to the next noble truth. To the third noble truth that the Lord Buddha teaches us. That is the noble truth that there is an end of all dukkha. So that is just a very simple, happy state. There is an end. And the fourth noble truth is the path that leads to the end of dukkha. And that is nothing else than sila that I explained to you, the five precepts, samadhi, the ability to concentrate on one object, and also mindfulness, or better, awareness, what is going on. What is going on? Every moment. And the third one is investigation, or is wisdom. Wisdom is the one that leads us up. Wisdom is the one that cuts through the desire, that removes the desire from our heart, that removes the kilesas from our heart. And the more the kilesas are the fangs of avijja, and avijja is the darkness, or what in Christianity is called the devil, I mean, whatever you call it. Each time we fight against the devil and we win, you know, one finger of him, or one of the kilesas, is removed. Each time we have an insight that is deep enough to cut one, then we have one left. But we have a lot of defilements. Kilesas are normally translated as defilements. But defilements is not a proper word. It's whatever is going to tell us what to do and what not to do, what to like and what not to like. That's a kilesa. Because there's a voice constantly broadcasting in our mind, you know, what we like and what we do, and commenting on what we do, and if it was good or if it wasn't good, if it should be better, if it wouldn't be better. That's all the KBC, Kilesas Broadcasting Company. You know, BBC, British Broadcasting Company. And what is in our heads, it's the internal radio that is called KBC. I mean, did it ever came to our awareness that there is something constantly commenting within our heads? Every situation that we meet, I mean, we experience it. When we sit, we know that we sit. We don't have to comment, now I'm sitting. When I feel pleasant or when I feel sweaty, I don't have to comment that I feel sweaty or pleasant, because that feeling comes before that comment. It is just like this you know, the broadcasters in the football stadium. I mean, everybody in the football stadium sees what is going on, don't they? But he tells everything, oh, now he'll make a move, now he'll make a kick. Yeah? Oh, maybe yeah, he's Italian, he must know about football. Don't they? Yeah. I mean, don't they broadcasting like that? I mean, they tell every move, everybody makes it. Now he says he's close to goal, you know. And now we are close to samadhi, you know. We are getting to our concentration, you know. And then suddenly it's gone. Whoops. They're gone. They're constantly broadcasting everything that is happening. I mean, a feeling comes into our senses, you know, and then this broadcasting company, you know, tells us, oh, there's a pleasant feeling or an unpleasant feeling. There's somebody running after the ball. So. Now before I think the next time I go a little bit into investigation, but now let's concentrate on the main topic that we can't do. We can't concentrate. We have a weakness in concentration. And that is a problem. I mean, without concentration, we cannot do it. We cannot learn. I mean, we know it all from study when we went to university. If we can't concentrate on the subject, you know, we can't. We just don't understand. If you can concentrate on the subject, you know, we understand. But if you read a book, you know, and our thoughts go out, you know, wild, just like, you know, what I'm going to this evening, what I'm going to eat, what I'm going to wear, there's a party next week, you know, and so on. I mean, How often we read the book, you know, we will never understand. Because our thoughts are not actually with the book, but they are out in the world. So. Now we have to learn to concentrate. Without concentration, there will be no awareness. There will be no sati. And without sati, there will be no wisdom. So we have to be aware of the things that are going on. So we need to take a focus on one point. So, the normal two points of focus are either what is called anapanasati, the awareness of breath coming in and the breath coming out at the tip of the nose. That's mostly known. Just keep your point of concentration there and know that the breath comes in and know that the breath goes out. Know that the breath comes in and know that the breath goes out. And now, if the breath is deep or if the breath is shallow, if the breath is long, if the breath is short. The same thing, if you think a lot, we can do the same thing with a mental repetition. You can mentally repeat Buddha or Dhamma or Sangha. Buddha, 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 Buddha. If you think Buddha, no other thought can come in. So. Very easy. Just simple, you know, so simple. And it's amazingly that we can't even do a simple job like that. We put our mind to, you know, keeping the attention on the breath or keeping our awareness on the breath, and just half a minute later our attention is gone. I mean, it just looks up for, you know, some scraps in the backyard. You know, it goes to the next holiday, or it goes to the here or there, or it goes to our past, or it goes to the future that doesn't exist yet. So, when we see it, you know, we bring it just back to the breath. Okay, that's the breath, that's the breath, that's the breath, that's the in-breath, that's the out-breath, that the in-breath is short, or the out-breath is long. Or we just say Buddha, 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 Buddha. Because if you think Buddha, we can't think anything. We can think Dhamma or Sangha. Or if you're Christian, you can think about Jesus or Maria or whatever. You know, it doesn't really matter. As long as you have faith in this world, it should be a one-syllable word, or a two-syllable word, but... So, just find something. I mean, the Lord Buddha gave us the teaching, that's why Buddha is so... there is some reverence for him when we repeat it. But some people are not easy with it. Okay, you know, just take whatever. But there should be a good meaning behind it. So if you're Christian, you know, just take the Lord or take Jesus or take Maria. It doesn't really matter. But we can't even keep on that. Even on that we can't keep. Because then it becomes boring. But who tells us that it becomes boring? The Kilesas tell us that it becomes boring. You know, there's something we should not forget when we do our practice. Or when we start the practice. There are two forces or two powers that are habituating our heart. That live in our heart. That is the power of light and that's the power of darkness. Or in other words, in Buddhist terms, it's the power of Dhamma and it's the power of Avijja. In Christian terms, it's the Lord and, or it's the light of the Lord or it's a, or it is the demon. It's the devil. These forces are always within our heart. The forces, you know, that tells us to meditate is the forces of Dhamma. Okay, that's something good, you know, I want to learn to concentrate. And half a second later, you know, the devil comes in and says, no, I don't like to meditate. That makes no sense. I have objectives. Yeah. And because we listen to the devil, yeah, okay, you have objectives. Yeah, yeah, that sounds reasonable. It doesn't make any sense to sit down and meditate. Because I'm so uncomfortable. Right? I mean, that position is not really comfortable. It's painful. And we listen to his logic. And then we get up. And then he was the victor. He has won the victory. But if you stick to our plan, you know, now I'm going to sit at least for an hour, no matter what is happening, and try to concentrate on the Buddha. And the moment, you know, I see the mind going out, I just grab him at his tail, you know, put him back to the Buddha. That's it. That's where we need all the effort, and that's where we need the determination. I mean, I don't want to know what he was thinking about. I don't want to know what he was after. I just know that he went out, so I grab at his tail and put him back to the Buddha. And that's all. And there we have to be extremely determined not to let go. I mean, that is a nice thought. Then comes, that's a nice thought. I mean, I've never thought about this. And then you're gone. You know, for the next half an hour, you're in your thoughts. Don't let that happen. You see it, you are in thoughts, you know, you just grab it and put it back to the Buddha. Or to the tip of the nose and observe your breath. And why is it one point? What is the whole point? What is the sense of, you know, concentrating on one point? Because it will lead us to one point of this. If we can keep our focus, if we can keep our attention and awareness on one point, it sooner or later will lead us to one point of this. But before we pass into one pointedness, we will pass into what is called Upacara Samadhi or called Access Samadhi. It is the world beyond thoughts. Our thoughts are going to stop. And in other words, it's the world of experience. Because then this KGB that is constantly working in the background, constantly commenting, is gone. And then for the first time we feel relief. Wow. We feel happy, we feel contented, we feel... peaceful, because that broadcasting has gone. That is the first thing. That is the first stage.
Upachara Samadhi, the world beyond thought. And there is no fear, there is no doubt. And when we come out of this phase, when we come out of this samadhi, maybe we can realize that all our worries, that all our fears were produced by thoughts. In the moment we transcend thoughts, there are no worries, there are no fears, there's just happiness or peacefulness or quietude, nothing else. All pleasant things. Nothing unpleasant. Well, that's interesting. So then we go on. Once we are in this state, you know, and we are refreshed from this state, we go on, concentrate on our breath, or concentrate on the Buddha, until we come into the stage of unpointedness. And this state of unpointedness is a very special one. It's called Apana Samadhi, or the deep state of Samadhi. Or Tenzin Rinpoche says it's a state of, it's the preview of Nibbana. It's that, the goal of the whole path, you can see it as a preview. What is it like? I can promise you, you know, the moment you come out of the state, you, the first thought is, how can I get back into it? Because it's so peaceful, it's so powerful, it's amazing. It's the first wonder of meditation that we can experience. And all what it takes is just to put our concentration on one point. That's all. But of course the devil is behind, you know, trying to grab, trying to seduce us, you know, like we say in Christian terms. Yeah? He seduces us with this thought or this idea, this memory of the past, or that painting of the future, and we go for it. We don't see him as our enemy, we see him as the friend who produces all with all these nice visions that actually never come true. Has ever the future been like you thought of it? How you painted it, you know, we can paint it, you know, it's so easy, you know, to paint the future. No? But it never comes this way. It never will happen this way that we painted it. So it's easy. I mean, all what it takes is your effort and determination and not letting the mind getting off that wrong point. One-pointedness is really, it's an amazing state of mind. Actually, Upachara for Samadhi will be an amazing state for you already. When there are no thoughts and when there are no memories, you know, what is happening there? I mean, why is it called access Samadhi? Because it has the access to all other realms. Yeah, we can go there from there. We can go to the heavenly realm or the hell realm or to any kind of realm. If we know how to board a train. Of course, that we have to learn. It's not, you know, that it's not quite, not normally that we can do it automatically. It's just like we come to an enormous train station and we don't know how it works. Well, first of all, we have to know how to board a train, how to get a ticket, where is the train leaving, what time is it leaving, and so on. I mean, we have to learn for quite a bit, you know, if we have never seen any things like trains before. So. That's why it's called access samadhi, because it gives us access to all things, all realms of existence. So it's a realm of experience. For most of you, you know, that will do the job. And, you know, I emphasize or encourage, you know, to get a little bit deeper, you know, to get something to know for yourself, you know, what it is like, you know. If you feel you want to go the way to Nibbana, then at least, you know, get a preview of the Nibbana before you want to go there. It gives you a boost of energy, it gives you a boost of confidence that actually what the Lord Buddha teaches is true. I mean, just with Upachara Samadhi, you know, you will see that, you know, beyond the world of thought there is no fear. There's no doubt, there's nothing, yeah? I mean, just gives you a boost, you know, that all what your imaginations are gone that moment. That there is something that you never knew of. I mean, in this world, you know, we believe only what we see and what we hear and what we feel and what we touch and what we taste and what we think. That there is actually something else, you know, just reachable, just above, you know. I mean, and all what it takes is a little bit of effort and determination to be able to concentrate on one point, and that's it. And not to let the devil, you know, sweep us away. And not to let the kilesas grab our hand, you know, and lead us in the wrong way. That's all. I mean, it's so simple. Everything, actually, you know, when you understand, when you do some investigation, you understand everything is so simple. I mean, it really boils down to a few things. I mean, just like, you know, you look at the computer. I mean, just look at the computer. I mean, you press the power button, you know, and it comes up, you know, and there's so many fantastic things that you can do. Huh? Hey! So many fantastic things you can do, huh? I mean, you can watch movies, you can listen to music, you can design, you can write texts or books and whatever, yeah? Everything. But if you boil it down to what it comes down, you know, it's just one transistor is on and one transistor is off. Two states. The combination of two states, you know, create this spectacle that we call computer. And now, you know, think about the people who are lost in these games, in these computer games, or virtual reality games. I mean, if you had a switch, you know, at the computer, you know, sometimes you would do it, you know, press the buttons and you see just a combination of zero and ones running across the screen. I mean, would you be fascinated by that? I mean, you would turn it off, you know, after 2 minutes. I mean, that is what is really happening in the computer, isn't it? I mean, everybody knows a little bit about it. Yeah, I studied computer, so I know a lot about it. And that's all what is happening. See you? Well, binary logic. And now if you boil this whole universe down, you will find there are 5 components. Boils all only down to 5 components. And the combination of these 5 components creates everything that we see, what we hear, what we touch, what we feel, what we see. Isn't that amazing? We are really living in a virtual reality game. And in this life we are on this stage, and in the next life we are on the another stage. Just like Shakespeare said. In this life I'm the king, in the next life I'm the servant. I mean, we all know it, you know, we had great writers. I mean, in England we had Shakespeare, in Germany we had Goethe. I mean, they were writing similar things at the same time. Two souls are in my chest, yeah? I mean, the soul of darkness and the soul of light. And they are really there, and you can experience every moment. And the moment you sit down and practice, you know, you will see that. Especially, you will see the force of the kilesas coming, pulling you out, trying to seduce you with this kind of thought or this kind of memory, or, you know, seducing with you or inducing some doubt in you. That doesn't bring anything, you know. I'm wasting my time. I should go to the beach, burn myself up, and then jump into the water to cool my pain off. And once my body is cold, you know, I lie down, you know, and then heat myself up in the sun. And that's what we call pressure. Then to cool down again, you know, jumping in the water. I mean, just see the things as they really are. I mean, they're just hilarious, you know, when you look at it in the right way. But we don't look at it in this way. We see it, you know, as fun and not fun. We see it as something that we want and not, and something that we dislike. We don't see it, what is actually going on. Just like that person who plays this virtual reality, he doesn't want to see what is actually going on. Because if he sees it, he stops playing it. So in the long run, we will get this wisdom, we will get this understanding. But first of all, we have to train ourselves. First of all, to keep it within the five precepts, and you're expected to do that as long as you're in the monastery. And then to train concentration. And then later on, the moment we can concentrate a little bit longer on our object, without deviating, without being drawn into thoughts and memories, I mean, we can start investigation. We can start to investigate what is actually going on. What the hell is going on, you know? Who is telling me I like this and who is telling me I don't like this? To see what is happening within our own heart, huh? To see these two powers, you know, trying to get on this throne. And there's only one throne. I mean, either of this power can be on the throne. And most of the time it's just darkness. It's just avicca, what it's called avicca. So, I offer this for your consideration, and I wish you a fruitful time here. Make the best out of it, you know, you don't hear that very often. This kind of dhamma is not like sand on the beach. Huh? It's more if you find a diamond in the sand. It's a teaching of the Lord Buddha himself. It's a teaching of the Lord Buddha, you know, he taught it to his monks to follow the teaching of the forest tradition. And the forest tradition is the one thing that leads to liberation. I mean, it's up to you. If you want liberation or not. Because people fighting for freedom, yeah, in every state, you know, they're fighting for freedom. You know, they use guns for it. What kind of freedom are they fighting for? I mean, we here, we are spiritual fighters and we fight for the freedom of mind. I mean, there's no, you know, nobody in the world fights for the freedom of mind because they all think they are free in their mind. They don't see how they are oppressed by their own minds, by their own thoughts. I mean, what brings you down into doubt? What brings you down into worry? What thing brings you down into fear? I mean, are you happy when you're afraid? Are you happy when you worry? Are you happy when you doubt? Are you happy when you're in a bad mood? Who the hell brings you down in this state of mind? And you're not free. I mean, your mind is not free. You're not free to think what you want to think. Because you're not even free to think Buddha, you know, for an hour. That's the easiest example where you see where you're not free. You cannot even control your body. You can't control the body and you can't control the mind. And that's what we have to learn in the first place. To learn to control the body and to control the mind. But we learn to control the body through the controlling mind. Because the body is controlled through the mind. So if you control the mind, then the body is controlled as well. So, just a second thought. Now I stop, otherwise.